Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening. Welcome live from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And you can see right behind me that the sun is coming down here on this beautiful, warm summer day right here at the Texas Medical Center. And I work right across the street, right over there in that little building over there called Baylor College of Medicine in Texas Children's Hospital. And it is absolutely awesome to have you with us this evening. And this is one of those programs. I really promise you that you're going to want to get your ink pen out, a piece of paper, and write some things down, because there's going to be some good wisdom here. There's going to be some good resources here that you'll be able to tag into. And hopefully, if you ever need or come across a need for these resources, you'll be able to have them. Looks like we have lost our guest, so I'm going to kind of just do a prelude here, and hopefully he will jump back on here shortly. Last week, I want to just officially apologize. I apparently had sent the wrong video production to the radio station to run while I had been on vacation. I actually took a vacation, first one where it was a real vacation with my son and grandkids and down in Disney World and in Florida. And we just loved it, had a great time. And as I was on the bus going into the hotel resort last Sunday night, it came across that the show was live, and I punched it. I thought, hey, wait, this is supposed to be Lisa Jacob of the star of Mrs. Doubtfire on that we pre-taped a couple weeks ago. And it wasn't. It was one of my lectures for a seminar up north, I believe, in Michigan. So what we're going to do is I'm going to resend. I sent the radio station the wrong one. So we will resend that to BBS Radio. They'll edit it up in a nice, pretty package for us. And they will be running that probably the first Sunday night in August is the next opening that we have. So the star of Mrs. Doubtfire will be Lisa Jacob, and she has written these two books, and she just did an unbelievable interview with Curtis and I, and she works now with veterans with PTSD, and she will be on the first week of August. Next week, a member, and I think he is a pretty higher up in the NAASCA organization, Bill Murray, will be on our program as our guest live next Sunday night. I appreciate you allowing me to tape last week and have a week off and away, but most of the time we'd like these to run live so we can just have off the cuff and no particular questions in line. I'm hitting my chat here, and it looks like we have lost our guest. So we're just going to keep on talking until he comes back. So let me know, chat me in when he comes back, okay? Let's see, the following week after that on the show, we have another member, and I'm looking forward to this. She is the regional director for the New England area, NAASCA, an ambassador And she just won the 2021 Heroin Award recipient up there. And her name is Lisa Zarconi. And that would be awesome. I am looking for the contact number. I believe I do, but I don't know if I can get to it right now. Let me look. This is called live radio, live TV, no problem here. You know, life's too short to get stressed out about too many things. I'm going to find this phone number so they can actually make a call to our guest tonight. While we're doing that, feel free to talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to type that number in here. Here it is. Okay. Why do they do that? I'm going to tell you what. This past week, I have found out new things in my life that sometimes we overthink, that our purpose in life is to work. I was born and raised that way. My mom and dad, you know, I think I went to have my first job when I was 12 years old. And then from 14 on, I believe I always had two jobs or more. And most of the time, like now, I have three jobs. And I have found out in this last week of finally taking a vacation, I can't remember the last time. It's been 4 or 5 years that I've actually taken a real vacation. But there's a lot more things that are important in life than just work. Our employment is the allowing of a person to make a living. It's not our life. And I'm guilty of that, and I was guilty of that. And this week, just kind of sitting back and relaxing and watching the kids enjoy these rides at Disney World and Mickey and Minnie Mouse and all of that was just absolutely awesome. And just taking a chance to recharge. Sometimes I've been guilty of burning the candle at both ends and never taking time for myself. It looks like we do have our guest back tonight. So if we can see him, go ahead and bring him online. I can. All right, Jimmy, there you are. Welcome tonight. Dr. Jimmy White is the founder and director of AIM Recovery Center. And he has a great way of getting my blood pressure to go from here to here with just a second of leaving me. All forgiveness and grace and mercy I will shed upon you, but it's good to have you back, Dr. White.
Welcome. Yes, my computer just went blank right as your intro was done, and I screamed. I didn't know what was going on. I ran and reset the internet, and, you know, I'm not the most computer-savvy person, so, oh, my goodness.
You know, I want to be honest with you. That's the reason I have BBS Radio taking care of all of this for me, because I can hardly turn my computer on. I always have laughed that the reason I had kids when I was younger in life was to help me with the TV remote and to mow the lawn. Well, they helped me with the TV remote, but they never mowed the lawn. But anyway, thank goodness that the program tonight is not based on our computer savvy, because neither one of us will be able to get it through. But I'm glad you can hear me and I can hear you, and you look great.
Yes.
Tonight.
Yes. Thank goodness.
And you are the founder and the director of AIM Recovery Center, and that is located in Dickinson, Texas?
Yes.
And where is Dickinson, Texas, for people that may be in Pennsylvania or Maine, in the part of Texas, what area?
Well, most people know Houston, and it's close to Houston. It's actually halfway between Houston and Galveston. So a lot of people maybe have taken a cruise from the port of Galveston. So it's halfway between.
Okay, so you put it right there on the map, so everybody knows now. Now, you from the from your very short bio, and that tells me the type of humbleness that you have, because normally when I ask for a bio from people, they send me three pages and every Rotary Club that they've spoken at, things like that, which is fine. I always enjoy that. But you just simply put that you're the founder and the director, and you have 30 plus years of counseling experience underneath your belt. What have you seen over the years? Because you have no idea. We have no question tonight. We're just going to talk as friends. What have you seen over the years changing in people's behavior and ability or inability to handle stress and anxiety? I just wrote an essay not too long ago. I think it was this afternoon on a project. The Beaver Cleaver days are over. What have you seen a difference in the last 30 years of your counseling experience?
Well, certainly, I should start by saying I think the attacks are greater. I think the attacks on our psyche, on our physicality, on our homes, on our ways we want to think about being successful, all of that's under attack at a greater level. I don't know why, but I think that our ability to cope with that kind of thing has diminished. And with each generation, it seems to be diminishing more and more. It's certainly not going up. And if the next question, of course, is, well, why? I don't think that fits on a bumper sticker. I mean, you could blame, well, it's commercials or it's TV or it's video games. Sure, it's all of that and 20 other things that just have created for us an emotional weakness. We seem to not be as able as we used to rebound from things. I've read stories about distant relatives in the 1800s who endured 3 or 4 miscarriages and a child that was stillborn and another one that died when they were 4. And they had a fire that destroyed their house when they were this age, and they made it. And I think, oh my goodness, nobody would make that today. We just don't have that emotional strength.
Do you think that's a generational breakdown over the last couple generations?
Yeah, you know, I do think that picking up a shovel and working a hard day physically lets you process a lot of negative emotions. I'll tell you that. If you're mad at your spouse, but you have to dig potatoes all day, you can just get it out. And by the time you come home that night, you're too tired to worry about it. But that's not the world we live in, nor is it the world we want to live in. We enjoy our air conditioning. I would not want to pick up a shovel. I like that it's 100 degrees outside and I am not in it.
Right.
But I guess there's some consequences for our luxury.
Do you feel that the younger generation, the teenagers, are going through an extra set of issues that we haven't seen in generations before?
Yeah, they are. They appear kind of lost. Not only are they dealing with destructive decisions, self-destructive decisions, but they just don't know. They just don't know. Yeah, I asked my dad not long ago, who's 90 years old. He just turned 90.
That's awesome.
I'm very fortunate. I have a 90-year-old dad and a 95-year-old mom, which means I have access to information I wouldn't have otherwise.
Right.
And I asked him, I was like, when you graduated high school, what were you thinking? And he said, you leave home and you go get a job. That's what you do. And that's what everybody did. And there was this sense that if you didn't do that, it wasn't okay. I was like, wow, that's really changed. I said, because most parents today would say they're concerned if their kid's ever going to leave the house. And so much so we have this new thing, you know, failure to launch. That used to be an insult. Now it's almost a medical diagnosis. It's so common. It's these kids are not equipped with all the skills and tools they need to go out and make it. And it's devastating for them.
Now, okay, without pointing fingers, and we'll eventually full circle this around to what you do, but because I love having these kind of conversations.
Yeah.
Without pointing fingers, do you think the inability to be equipped for the society of when they graduate to just go and do it is a failure of the school system of paying attention too much to the IQ instead of the EQ? Or do you think it's just kind of a breakdown of society and expectations and parental supervision and everything together?
Well, it's certainly popular and easy to dump on the schools and blame the schools. But at some point, I think parents got the notion that schools were to do a lot of the work for them. Mm. And so maybe we should lay the blame at parents first, because if the school system doesn't have it, you could complain about it. You can gripe about it. It's not going to change for your kids. Even if it changes, it's not going to change for 5 or 10 years. So in the meantime, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You got to do something with your kids. And I think a lot of parents maybe don't. They want the school system to fix it. And of course, now we're talking about a second generation of that, not a first generation. So the parents today grew up with parents who thought the school was going to fix them. And so it's multi-generational now, and it's a bit of a mess. But I think that same thing is true in the church. I've seen it in the church where even like strong Christian people expect the church to do all the spiritual training for their children. And then they're surprised when their children don't have everything that they wanted them to have. Well, if you wanted them to have it, why didn't you teach it to them?
Well, the kicker of that is that I agree with you, and I've heard the statement from parents, and it's probably the same way with the church and the schools. Hey, I dropped you off. I picked you up. Why didn't you do it while you was in there? And with church, well, why didn't you bring them in and be involved in what they were learning and show them how to do it and aid them and worship with them and show them how to do Bible study, show them how to pray? And then the same way with the school system, get involved, be an advocate instead of somebody who's sitting at home and go, boy, this teacher sure does give a lot of homework because you're mad that you have to be at the dining room table helping them. And, they're too busy doing this on their own instead of paying attention. And it can't be a drop-off society anymore. You have to take their hand and walk them through it and be an example and an enforcer.
And the proof that that's not happening is that in this pandemic, we had parents and their children forced to be at home for months on end together. And now we're seeing the results of that being terrible for emotional health, being terrible for academic progress. To which I say, that means they were in the house with the parents and the parents weren't doing much with them. They weren't, because you would think there might be even an uptick of emotional stability because they had spent so much extra time with their parents. And instead it went the other direction. So I almost have this vision of people stuck in their homes during the pandemic, but each in their own bedroom, totally alone.
I think you're probably right. And I do have a feeling that public school enrollment is going to drop. Homeschool enrollment is going to soar in the next year or two. And as long as, everybody is equipped to handle that, that's wonderful. But if it's not, we're going to have a generation that may be lagging behind. But okay, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take our first break. On the other side of this break, Doctor, we're going to talk about what you do now.
Okay.
How you help people, what they're dealing with, and how you reach out into your communities and the people can get the help that they desperately need, and where that help is. And I appreciate the work that you're going to be able to share with the people. If you want to get involved in the conversation tonight, 888-627-6008. The wonderful people of BBS Radio will answer the phone politely, and they will tap you right on through. 888-627-6008. And we're right back with the second section of this awesome interview with Dr. Jimmy White. We'll be right back.
Buy
finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Welcome back. We have Dr. Jimmy White from AIM Recovery Center in Dickinson, Texas, right here with us tonight. We're just going to get into what you do now, doctor, and how, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you open your eyes and you thank God for giving you another day. What is it that you try to accomplish before you lay back down in that bed in the evening? Throughout that day, what is your purpose and goal of this recovery center, and what are you really after?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, we're trying to help people take the next step. Now, those steps add up to a new life separate from drugs and alcohol. And of course, all those things we were talking about in the first segment, that helps lead people to not knowing what to do. And so not knowing what to do, one of the answers is to self-medicate. It's so common. And they don't wake up planning to become addicted to something or planning to have to get drunk that day. They don't plan that. They just are trying to survive and make it through the next day. But they make some choices along the way, and 100 choices later, they find themselves down a hole they can't get out of. And that's where we come in. That's where the recovery center comes in. And we try to help people that are at various levels of stuckness in their holes. And we try to help them get out. And but more than just get out, we want them to be able to go from addiction or alcoholism, drug addiction, from that to a life of freedom and success in their own eyes. You know, it is difficult once you've become addicted to something. That's hard to break out of. That's noble to break out of. It's a big deal when someone says they've done that. They have done a very hard and noble thing, and there needs to be a payoff, you know, when they've done that. And so we spend a lot of time at our place trying to help them prepare for what's next. What's success look like for you? What's this life going to have in it for you to feel proud of it? Now, I think that's a payoff that is worth the trouble and the difficulty of getting yourself off of pills or alcohol. If you've got a life you're proud of, that's something worth walking away from drugs for.
What kind of treatment do you do? Do you only do residential? Do you do outpatient? Do you, because you are state licensed, correct?
We are state licensed.
Which is wonderful and an unbelievable goal. And right there is a huge picture of accomplishment with your establishment and your center right there.
Yes, we do a wide variety of things because everybody's at a different place. And then, of course, some people have not only their need for care could be short or long, but also their timing, their place in life. They may not have as much time to give. And though there's certainly huge payoff, the longer you can stay in treatment, the better Oh, by far. So our full program is 4 months long, but let's face it, not everybody can do that. And right. So we've got, you can do 30 days, 60, 90, or the full 120. We have outpatient program. Now our residential program is not residential like most people think of it. We actually are, we do a full day of treatment with people, and then we make arrangements for a place they can stay. It's, you know, normally residential is in the same place, and
right.
there's a, so it's not quite that level of care. So that highest level of care that's out there, we don't provide that.
So this is not a dorm room setting type.
No, okay. We don't do that.
But it isn't all day, and then they go home or to another place?
To another place, like a sober living place that we have a relationship with.
And then they come back the next day?
Yes.
Is it a Monday through Friday treatment? Is it the 7-day-a-week treatment, 3-day-a-week? How many days?
We have programming all week long because there are people who need that. You know, some recovery centers, you go and you stay there all week long, but you're only getting 20, 25 hours of actual treatment. We've got about 60 hours of stuff that we provide a week for each person if they need it. So we've got all these options available for them. And then, of course, some people, they don't need all of that, but then we have a lot of options to offer them depending on what they do need, because we're offering so much. They've got options then for whatever they need, like a grief support class. Not everybody needs that, but if you need it, we've got it. The anger management piece, some people need that. We've got it. Some people need help with money management. They've lived in a drug culture long enough that they don't know basic financial things in the normal world. They just know things in their very different society that they're living in. And so they need some help with something as basic as that. We've got all that kind of stuff.
So you're not only helping them to recover, you're helping them build a life of potential success in the future. So you're giving them life skills before you say, hey, good luck, welcome to the world.
Yeah, otherwise they're going to go back. Yeah. They will fail, and they will eventually go back to what they're successful at, which is scoring drugs or getting drunk. They know how to do that. They're experts at that. They probably have friends that will help them do that.
Yeah.
And so we've got to desperately, or we got to think of them as being desperately needing a new system, and they got to learn it fast. And it's the system that maybe you and I naturally function in without even realizing it. We've got those skills, but they have different skills. I've been in a car with one driving for 15 minutes. And while I was driving, they claimed to have spotted 5 drug deals just driving down the road. See, these people are smart. They have great observation skills. They just are using those in a different way. And so we have to help them use their talents and gifts in a whole new way, which they can do.
Yeah.
But they need some help. They need somebody who will patiently guide them through the information and wisdom they need to make it in the world we live in.
What age group do you deal with?
We're adults. So 17 and up, all ages.
So 17 and up?
Yes.
Okay.
Technically, it's 18 and up, and then you can get 17-year-olds if they're functioning more in an adult capacity in their life. So that's the age range. That's a state requirement.
Are you an organization that, for instance, if you've been stopped with a DUI and a court mandates treatment, do they use you as one of those resources, a possible resource?
We can do that. Now, there are some rehabs that have contracts with certain counties, and that county might send all of their court referrals to them. We don't have that kind of a contract with anyone. So that means that it requires a judge or a probation officer signing off that they approve of our program, which is usually just a 5-minute conversation on the phone with the right person.
What's a typical day, Doctor, when somebody comes in and What kind of treatment? I know you do several different ways, but is there a particular order of that treatment that you like to start the process in at the early stages?
Well, of course, we're advocates for our full 120-day program if they need it. Of course, not everybody needs it, and they go through a diagnostic to see if they need that. So for our most intense, they would be doing like some group education and processing groups in the mornings, and in the afternoons they might be doing some recreation, might be doing a private counseling session. We actually have two different kinds of counselors that they see: one, a professional therapeutic counselor, and then one that's more like a life coach that's helping them put their future plan together, so that they're working both pieces. And then in the evening, we're doing life skills and education classes. And we also offer a spiritual class every day, because we believe that there is a spiritual component to a successful life. And so we want to encourage our clients to delve into the spiritual side of their person. Some counselors will tell you that addicts and alcoholics have a heightened spirituality about them naturally, and that's one of the things that makes them susceptible to drugs and alcohol. And so they definitely need to be able to explore that and investigate that in their life.
Do you implement any particular spiritual program as far as you use Celebrate Recovery or anything particular like that, or do you manufacture your own?
Well, we do offer we will be offering, starting at the end of July, a Celebrate Recovery meeting on Saturday mornings. We're not a 12-step program, although we're 12-step friendly. We understand the notion that when they finish with us, of course, they'll have an aftercare program with us, but that they need to find some support out in their community. And one of the places they can go to do that is a place like AA or a place like Celebrate Recovery, which is kind of a Christian spin on the 12-step program. And that's where they're going to find a lot of their support. So we want to encourage them in that. And we in no way say anything negative about AA or the 12-step approach, even though we don't use it in our program. Right. People can get AA for free by going to AA. So we don't do that in our program.
Now, do you accept insurance?
Yes, we accept insurance. We are not going to be a preferred care provider for most of the insurances that we seem to be getting these days. But we work with insurance. We bill for insurance. And so it's a combination of self-pay and insurance pay for our clients.
Yeah. If anybody wants to get involved, because I know there's some people on the edge of their seats right now, 888-627-6008. And my friends, James and Kelly, if you're listening tonight, they've run a recovery center. James is a successful candidate through that program, and Kelly runs it up in Southern Illinois. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, we'd love to have you call in. What do you think some of the key elements doctor is that causes people to become addicted to the self-medication? I mean, do you think, have you noticed in the 30 years plus counseling, is it because of an event that's happened in their life that triggered the falling off of the ledge into despair that caused them to reach for that self-medication? Or is it something else that I'm completely missing?
Well, I have my opinion, and this isn't verifiable in some research at this point anyway, but okay. I can recall going with someone that I was working with, and they invited me to attend with them an NA meeting, Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
And so I attended a couple of meetings, and I noticed that everybody that shared had this same element in their story. And so afterwards, the person who was directing that particular meeting, I went to him after the meeting was over, and I said, "Can I ask a quick question?" "Sure." And I said, what percentage of people in NA would you say have experienced sexual abuse? And he did the most embarrassing thing. He yelled out for everybody in the room to stop, to freeze right where they were. And they did. And he said, I got a question for everybody. And I was like, oh no, I was so embarrassed. And he did the unthinkable. He said, how many of you have been sexually abused? That's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the room raised their hand. And that was striking to me. And he said, I believe, this is his opinion, having been leading NA meetings for years, he said, I think it's 100%. And I have to say that it seems like that, we can't be sure about that 100% number, but I think there is a huge correlation between abuse and addiction, between abuse and needing to cope with the pain of abuse with drugs and alcohol. I think it's a heavy predictor. Something else that I've seen be a heavy predictor is being involved in domestic violence. So you see it, you have that trauma in your life, and just the visualization of that you can't get out of your mind, that it haunts you, leads people to addiction. And of course, the third predictor that I've seen a lot is just unresolved grief. It seems like that one great loss, it could be the death of somebody, or it could just be, I was destined to be a football star and get a scholarship to college, and then I blew out my ACL and that dream was gone. And then 6 months later, they're drunk every night. You know, it there seems to be a correlation with those three things: grief, domestic violence, and the big one is sexual abuse, which I think is why, you know, that was one of the reasons when we first talked, we connected, you know, at that level, because we're in that same world.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not for sure. I thank God that I never reached for alcohol or drugs. My dad was an alcoholic. My other brothers used pretty heavy.
Wow.
And I never did, never tasted it. But I'm trying to think, well, why didn't I? And I do think the church saved me in that realm, because I was involved in that at a young age from my grandma and grandpa and my aunt and uncle.
Maybe they gave you just enough support to keep you from that.
It was that one buffer that kept me somewhat level when some people would have maybe dropped out and bottomed out. But I do think there's days, and I think even today, and you may be able to relate, there's days that you wish you could numb it. I try to think, okay, what do I do to over-medicate myself some way in an activity or in behavior, in something that offsets what some people do when they reach for, you know, a drink or some drugs. And I'm sure there's some habits and things that I have in my own life.
Well, there are many addictions that we in fact, some would say that everybody is destined to be addicted to something. It's just whether that something is legal and whether that something is destructive.
Right. Right. I tell you what, if you want to get involved tonight, 888-627-6008, we'd love you to call in. We're going to take our last commercial break. And then on the other side of this, I want to just drill in a little bit deeper about your treatment, a little bit deeper about maybe think about maybe one or two people that has been one of the greatest success stories in your program, and then maybe about some of your goals and how people can personally get in touch with you and your AIM recovery system and what a recovery center. And what I want to do right as soon as we come back from the break, I want to throw out all that information about how to contact you so we don't get chasing a rabbit. And
okay.
So I want to make sure people have that access. We'll be right back with Dr. Jimmy White after this last commercial break. Don't leave us. Be right back.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right, welcome back. I don't know about you, but look back behind me. Is that not a beautiful scene of the sky and the sun going down and the blueness? You know, God is a great God. And whenever I see that every evening, it's just like, wow. There's some great things still left in this world to not overlook. We have a lot of comments going on Facebook, and I'm reading them. I've texted my son to see if he wants to come on or if he wants me to read them or whatever. But Dr. White, if somebody wanted to, if somebody's sitting right now, in any place in the country, correct? And they're saying, hey, I have a situation. I need to talk to somebody. I need help. I don't know what to do. I have a son, a daughter. That I need to get some help with, or a husband or a wife, how would they get in touch with you and to find out more about what you do, and maybe you can be able to help them out? What's the best way?
Two ways. First, they can call us at 832-753-7118.
Okay.
That's 832-753-7118. Or they could go to our website at aimrecoverycenter.com, and there's a contact menu there where they could fill out a form and we could contact them later by email or phone. Now, people out of state, we obviously can't offer all of our services to them because some of them are require you to be close by. You know, an outpatient, you're staying at home. Well, a person in Louisiana probably is not driving to us every day. So there's a limit in terms of what we can offer to people out of state. But there are people who travel cross country to get help. People like to be private and anonymous, so they would rather not do treatment in their own hometown a lot of times if they can't. They'd rather go someplace else just for the privacy of it. You can understand that. And of course, also some places – the treatment centers are very expensive, and so it's cheaper for them to travel and go to some place that's more reasonable. And we are definitely at the lower end of cost for rehab centers in America. But our services, we try to be on the high end of what we provide for a very reasonable rate. So that's why someone might want to travel to us versus take their treatment in California or New England, where things can be very expensive.
And your website is what?
AIMRecoveryCenter.com.
AIMRecoveryCenter.com. And what's the AIM stand for? I love it. So I want to hear it.
It says for Accept, Inspire, Mentor. We kind of have a mentoring philosophy about us. We think that's what people need. They need to be mentored, someone to take them by the hand and walk with them, not just teach at them. And so we really try to have that in our mindset as we work with clients.
I have a comment or two, and I just want to share this. I'm putting them up here without mentioning names. Does research still note genetics or DNA for alcoholism passing on from generation to generation, particularly in males?
I'm not aware of scientific studies that prove that. I believe that the Bible teaches that there is the ability for sin or appetites for certain destructive things to pass down from generation to generation. I think that's biblical. And what I do see in people is the idea, what I've just seen in the recovery side of things is that we all have choices, right? We have choices, but some of us have a lot of pressures going on to those choices. And so when you have a lot of pressures going into the choice, of course, it makes it harder to make a good choice. No excuse, of course, just the facts. Some of us have an easier time with choices than others.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, like the way you were brought up, that made it harder, but not impossible for you to make good choices for yourself.
Yeah,
it wasn't impossible, but it did make it harder than somebody else might have. But what happens is when you choose drugs and alcohol, eventually, if you do that over and over, for some people, not all, but for some people, that begins to affect and damage the brain. At a level where, you know, our brains are made up of different parts. And one part of that is the moral and decision-making part. And then we've got another part of our brain that's that part that it keeps us alive. It is the part that makes sure we have food and we have shelter and we have, you know, we can procreate. But if you get that damage done in your brain from the alcohol and drugs, then believe it or not, drugs and alcohol can step down into that primal part of the brain. And when that happens, you're no longer free to choose to not do the drug or not do the alcohol. It's as important to your base of and your core self as getting food. And if you don't get it, you're going to die. So you cease to be able to choose. That's my best way to explain how addiction really becomes what people say, you know, well, is addiction a disease? Yeah, because you get brain damaged from drugs and alcohol.
Well, do you believe the research of, for instance, being traumatized at a young age of any kind of trauma, that it does damage a portion of your brain, that when you do reach for that first drink, that first pill, you are more in the behavior to become addictive because of the damage that has been done from trauma, not from from already choosing alcohol or drugs, but from some type of trauma to your brain, that it could automatically make you more susceptible to having addictive behavior throughout your life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you're stepping above my expertise just a little bit, but I think it probably attacks both sides. It's going to put pressure on the choice piece, but it's also going to, I would love to see the brain studies on that to see, is there a way to prove that those traumas actually do affect brain function? And if they do, then it's affecting you at both sides, at the beginning with choice and at the end by making you have a brain weakness that would make you more susceptible to that. Wow. Yeah. No wonder it leads to that so often.
And I'm trying to become involved in research at Baylor College of Medicine, that they are now starting to discover that your DNA of a baby in the womb of a mother that has been sexually traumatized at a young age, the DNA of the child inside of that mother can be affected, and it causes their brain to function differently than what a normal brain would. And I think that's kind of research is going to be fascinating and absolutely cutting edge material eventually. And there is some research, but I know there's a lot more research that needs to be done in that.
Well, certainly, anecdotally, having not done that research, probably nearly every counselor you would talk to, certainly everyone I've probably ever addressed the issue with, would tell us, wow, if you've had sexual abuse, there's something that has shattered. There's something that's broken, and it's not going to be easy to fix. And especially in talking with a number of men over my life who've had sexual abuse, had experienced it themselves, and it they are just trying to survive.
And if they had
that happen to them as a child, some of the things that they chose to do to survive were also destructive. But what do you expect when a five-year-old is making the choices of how to survive this horrible trauma? They're not going to make grand decisions.
It's tough.
It's very, very, very heavy. It's a very heavy thing to know.
I thought your story from the ENA leader that night is very powerful, because it does show that trauma does affect future behavior no matter what. My son Curtis is on here. Kurt, I asked one of the questions that was on the page. Is there anything else that you have that you want to throw in at Dr. White tonight?
Wow, I didn't hear that clearly at all.
He told me to hold on, so he's coming on.
I think we have another one. If the research still denotes this, then does it make sense when no sexual abuse, grief, or domestic violence, but simply the first taste of alcohol for someone carrying those genes may also create an addiction?
That's a great question. Here's what I think. I think that we've got a number of systems in our body. And, we've got a respiratory system, a digestive system, and then we've got an emotional system. And this emotional system within us, just like the other parts, it can have its own problems. See, I can have a respiratory system, but I could also have asthma or COPD or something worse. And it can make that part of my body weak. And even that part of my body can then begin to affect other parts. Mm-hmm. And I think that at the emotional level, which we don't think about so much, that's a system within us too. And it can have weaknesses. And I think that there are some people who have weaknesses, perhaps in their emotional system or somewhere in their psyche, in their psychology, or it could even be physical. And that makes them highly susceptible to something like just a small amount of exposure to something like drugs or alcohol, and it just clicks over very quickly for them. So yeah, that certainly a person can experience a rapid decline into right. a hole they can't get out of. Typically, it seems to take a bit more time, and some drugs get the body involved in the choice making very early on, and then it makes it double hard to choose to not do the drugs. It becomes physically addictive, which is another whole piece.
Right. I'll tell you what, Doctor, we have about 30 seconds. Okay. Anything that you want to just share real quick before we sign off, because they have another show to go to?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. I'd love to be back anytime. And, we're here down in Dickinson, helping people who need help. Boy, there's a lot of people who need help. And there are lots of people around who are helping. And that's a great thing. We need more of that. But that's what we do. And we would love to hear from anybody who has, especially in light of what you do and what your show is, maybe some of those people that you touch are, they've taken that next step and they have tried to solve their problems with alcohol and drugs. They should give us a call. We can help them create a much better life for themselves.
AIM Recovery Center, Dr. Jimmy White, Dickinson, Texas. And it's been great to have you with us tonight. And I appreciate your time, my friend. Looking forward to working with you in the years to come. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
As we do every show and every week, we always like to close with just this one saying, no matter what you've gone through, no matter what you're going to go through tomorrow, no matter what has happened to you in the past or what's going to happen to you in the future, I want to guarantee you there's always hope. Join us right here next week for another edition, 8 p.m. live from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless you. Have a great week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.